Into the Weird, Episode 36, Mad Mordo.
Welcome to Into the Weird, a podcast celebrating the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I'm your host, Billy D, and alongside me is Howlin' Herman Lowe. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Billy man. Thanks for introducing me with this Halloween, moniker in mind, because after all, we're right around the corner from Halloween, our favorite month of the year. Still not quite there
can't
yet.
Can't wait.
Yeah. So that's why we're not
can't
doing...
wait. Love
I
it.
Can't. Oh, I love Halloween. Are we going to do 31 Days of Horror again, man?
I can try, man. I don't know.
I hopelessly failed.
A lot going on. So yeah. Much going on. I don't know if I can even try to. Pull
yeah, podcast wise, we might not have the time. No, let's just tentatively say we can't make it, but we should try to watch at least 15 horror movies. You know, roughly half of what we would have watched in a full 31 days of Halloween month. You know, from last year, for instance. So I didn't even watch 15 last year, even though I had lots of time on my hands. I couldn't even make it. Oh, man.
It's not easy.
Yeah, but like I said, we're not quite there yet. That's why we're not doing a Halloween-themed episode this time around. This is firmly still a September episode, and we're talking about the Doc. Of course, we're wrapping up the Dormammu invading Earth storyline. And then we're also starting a new storyline involving Eternity. So classic stuff from the Doc this week. I'm looking forward to it, Billy. But first, you know, as we want to do these days, I'm going to tell the listeners where I'm chilling at the moment. I'm drinking a Taiwanese Gukeng coffee, and I'm sitting here on Counter Earth, you know, with the High Evolutionary as a guest, and he's complimenting my Jawa brewing skills. And that's what I'm up to at the moment.
well, let me tell you something. It's interesting that you mentioned Counter Earth, because you're going to be a little surprised later when we talk about something involving Counter Earth.
Well, dude, serendipity right there. I like, just for full disclosure to the listeners, I don't know what your recommendations of Ragador are, or what you're going to bring for Shop Talk. So this is completely just you and I being on the same. We have the same kind of, we have a rapport between us. I'm not quite saying it's a Scott and Jean Grey type of rapport. No way. It's more like a Luke Cage, Power Man and Iron Fist type of rapport.
or Scott and Psylocke when he's, you know, eyeballing her.
Oh, dude. So what you're giving me the body check? We don't even have our cameras turned on. You won't be impressed what with my... lockdown weight gain.
That was one of my favorite bits ever, when he was getting all horny for Psylocke, and then he was like, hey, Jean, how's it going? And she's like, what were you just thinking about? And he's like, nothing. It's exactly. Like, dude, she's a telepath. She knows what you're thinking, you idiot.
Yeah, exactly, man. And plus, they have a rapport. I mean, she probably knows what he's thinking even before he thinks it. You know, they've got that link. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, then he ran off eventually with Emma Frost as well. Now, that was after Jean died. But, you know, he was already giving Emma Frost the eye, what was it, during Grant Morrison's new X-Men run, before she passed away the second time, before Gene, I mean, died the second time. So, come on. Jeez, the guy's, you know, a reprehensible dog. Scott Summers. But, you know, I'm not I'm not like most fans, right, Billy, who hate... Well, not most fans, I should say. There's lots of Cyclops fans out there. I don't hate Cyclops. You know, he's probably one of the best superhero team leaders, field commanders in Marvel, in all of comics. You know, that's just the way I see him. It's just the way he's been, the storylines he's been involved in centering around him, it hasn't always been my cup of tea, you know?
And, yeah, I like his Bronze Age stuff. And then, you know, Bronze Copper. But then after that, I feel like he went off the rails.
Yeah, once he joined X-Factor 2, I mean, he was like a completely different character for me in X-Factor.
Yeah.
And then once he returned to the X-Men during the 90s, Jim Lee era, no. And then with the animated series showing him to be a total dickhole, you know, I was I was a wuss too. I had enough of that. But, you know, you shouldn't go by that. You should pick your favorite version of the character. We know what we're talking about there because... After all, we're talking our favorite version of Stephen Strange here. We're not talking most modern versions. Although later, I've got a modern version I'm going to quickly reference that I was quite impressed by. But before we get there, Mr. B, I think it's time to let our listeners know about specifically the details of what we're going to be discussing. We're doing Doctor Strange Volume 2 of his ongoing series from the early 1970s, Issue 9 and 10. Issue 9... wraps up the Dormammu, Umar, you know, dead junkie, Mother Earth, Gaia storyline that we've been discussing. And then we're heading into a new storyline called Alone Against Eternity, involving, of course, Eternity and Nightmare, one of our old favorite villains. And if I'm not mistaken, Grant, our old podcast host and buddy who helped us to start Into the Weird, Grant's favorite Doctor Strange villain, Nightmare, finally returning. The last time we saw him was during the beginning of the Shuma-Gorath saga in Marvel Premiere, if I'm not mistaken. So we've seen glimpses of him, you know, showing up, but that was more in a memory type capacity of a memory realm or a dream realm. And when Strange was encountering Death, we've seen Nightmare pop up again. But I mean, he wasn't really involved in a full on, you know, assault on Doctor Strange like he's, you know, he's capable of. So, Eternity is involved. I love it when Doctor Strange goes cosmic, when they think big. And mostly Steve Englehart did that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but he can also give us some more human-based stories sometimes. We'll see that happening in the future, where they focus on more mundane, day-to-day, you know, human-type stuff that the Doc is involved in. But here it's firmly like, you know, okay, Alone Against Eternity... It's the name of the storyline. It tells you all you need to know. But, Doc, so I've got the first issue, right? I need to give a synopsis of that. I'm first going to give the listeners some details. But before I do that, I want to know, like, this is one of your earliest Doctor Strange comics, right? Did you read this way back when you started collecting Doctor Strange and the Essentials?
Yeah, for sure. I had the Essentials, but then I also slowly started grabbing single issues. And since, you know, back then they weren't anywhere near as expensive as they are now, every time I saw a Doctor Strange issue, I would grab one. And number 9 here was one of the earliest ones I got. Now, I got it really, really cheap, probably 50 cents or a dollar, because it's not in the greatest shape. You know, it looks like at some point some savage folded it like in half, but... It's in decent shape. It's readable, but this is one of my earliest single issues for sure. I love it.
Yeah, you see, when I've read this, it was also one of my earliest ones. I picked it up when I was a kid. I didn't like it. Full disclosure, Billy, I was so confused. I didn't know what was going on here. I mean, the Dormammu storyline wrapped up fine, but I did not expect. I thought it was going to be Steven versus Dormammu, huge sorcerer smackdown. And in fact, that's not what we got. So I didn't like it as a kid. And then, you know, the very next issue, which I also picked up roughly around the same time as I picked up issue 9, when I read issue 10 as a, you know, as a young one, I firmly did not completely understand what was happening. You know, with Strange, Eternity showing up, you know, saying the world's going to end. His reasons are vague. I didn't know what happened. But then, you know, it's one of those stories you kind of... have to keep reading, and then it starts to make sense. So it's definitely Englehart, you know, sort of sowing the seeds to a greater storyline here that he's building up to. and you just gotta gotta deal with the confusion in the beginning. It's one of those issues, you know. And not a lot of kids, I think, especially for me, I was a very impatient kid when I was young, and I did not like these issues. I love the Colin art, of course, Gene Colin, but I thought this was weak sauce. The ending of the Dormammu arc and then heading into the Eternity storyline. I don't know why. But now, you know, with hindsight, of course, and everything, and with rereading the following issues, you know, that the subsequent issues, I realize that it's actually brilliant, you know. But I just want to mention that, you know, since this is part of the history of collecting, you know, you kind of sometimes have to return to something and then discover its brilliance. I do that with a lot of Grant Morrison stuff. You know, because Alan Moore, I can see the brilliance from the get-go, and then I reread it and it becomes even more brilliant. But sometimes with someone like Grant Morrison, or even sometimes with people like Steve Gerber, you know, I kind of have to I read it and I'm like, I don't know what was going on there. And then I have to come back to it at a later date. And then I see, oh, okay, this is what they were aiming at. And it works. Yeah.
Morrison is a different writer for sure. He's on a different wavelength for a lot of people, me included. Some things I like of his, like, you know, his X-Men, I thought he had some really neat concepts and things going on there, and some of the other stuff I thought fell a little flat. But you gotta, you know, admire the guy for having the balls to write some crazy stuff and out there.
Yeah. No, he definitely did that. Definitely did that in spades, like you say. But you know, this one particularly, though, I think is Engelhardt actually at his best, because, you know, he does focus on some character development here. You know, he goes into Doctor Strange's psyche and discusses madness. And, you know, in previous issues, we were dealing more with questions of philosophy, with religion, you know, with the nature of a father-daughter relationship and rejection and all of that. But now we're focusing on, you know, with the mental strain that it takes to be the Sorcerer Supreme, and how you kind of have to be so mentally sound. And even though you are like that, you're still under this tremendous pressure and you could crack. And, you know, so this is a different sort of Achilles heel that's being exploited here by Steve Englehart. And once you realize that, as it goes through the story, this is particularly concerning the storyline involving Eternity, then you start to appreciate it more. So actually, it's pretty great. You know, now finally I get it. Not now, but I, you know, with subsequent rereadings, I eventually loved this. But when I was a kid, no. This was some of the issues that I sort of like just stacked in my, well, I didn't have a long box back then, just stacked it into my closet and didn't read it for years on end. So, unfortunately. Okay, Billy, so I'm going to give us some specs here involving, you know, is particularly issue 9. All right, this is Doctor Strange, Volume 2, Issue 9, cover by Gil Kane and Dan Atkins. And it was cover dated August 1975, but on sale May the 13th, 1975. 25 cents, edited by Len Wein. And the title of the story is Consummation. Writer, Steve Englehart, penciled by Gene Colan, inked by Frank Chiaramonte, lettered by Karen Mantlow. So Bill Mantlow's wife there. Mm-hmm. And colorist Janice Cohen. And this, of course, can be found in various collections. The new Alone Against Eternity, Doctor Strange collection has that. You can also find this in the Marvel Visionaries. Doctor Strange by Roy Thomas, Essential Doctor Strange, Volume 3. And Marvel Masterworks, Doctor Strange, Volume 5. And there's a lot. And, of course, the Marvel app has it. And ditto goes for Issue 10. So, let me get to the synopsis here. All right, here we go. Completely revived and living off the energy of Gaia, Dormammu breaks through the Earth's surface and exits in Arizona, causing a panic among tourists and Native Americans alike, some of whom he promptly destroys. Meanwhile, in Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum, the mystics that Clea summoned to aid Steven in issues past offer their expertise to the Sorcerer Supreme against Dormammu, but he snubs them. With Clea in tow, Steven travels to Arizona to confront Dormammu and Umar. Dormammu has his own troubles to contend with because his sister Umar employs a tricky spell to drain him of power after he turned on her by seeking to banish her to another dimension. Possessed of her brother's strength and seemingly all-powerful, Umar prepares to subjugate the Earth. No sooner has she grown to giant stature when she is met by Orini, who talks of their past love affair and reveals to the readers that Umar is the mother of one of our main characters. Strange and Clea arrive soon after to battle Umar and Orini. During the Mystic Melee, Clea frees Gaia from her prison beneath the Earth, and with the Earth Goddess's help and the help from the minds of every living creature on Earth, they manage to negate Umar's power and end Dormammu's reign of terror. A very human-looking Umar lapses into unconsciousness, and Orini spirits her away to the dark dimension, bidding a final farewell to his estranged daughter, Clea. And that is the summary for issue 9. Yeah. Okay, Doc. Let's talk about the cover first. What do you think about this Gil Kane and Dan Adkins cover?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever wish you could sip cocktails and discuss great books with your friends while hanging out in a rundown piano bar? Here on the Literary Guys podcast, that's what we do. I'm Dr. Gordon McCallan.
And I'm author Zachary Kellyan. Each month, we discuss books from two different views of modern masculinity.
From both a gay
and a straight perspective.
From To Kill a Mockingbird
to future governors in the jungle trying to kill a predator. We welcome everyone to join our conversation on the good and toxic of what literature and pop culture have to say about masculinity. So pour yourself a drink and join us now for Season 3.
Literary Guys. That's G-U-I-S-E. LiteraryGuys.com.
I see what you did there.
I think it's not great. It's subpar. It's very subpar for me. Clea, it's very cartoony, first and foremost.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it looks nothing like Gil Kane. So I almost feel like, did Kane just do a layout and Adkins did everything else? Because you cannot, not to my eye, can I see Gil Kane in this cover anywhere. You know, it's very cartoony, which is not like Kane from this era.
Yeah, definitely not.
And it's just, I don't know, it's not great, man. It doesn't really do much for me at all. Clea looks like a little odd. Her boobs look ridiculous.
Yeah. It's too much.
I just don't know.
No, I'm the same. I don't like the cover. I do see a little bit of Kane in there, but it's not good Kane. Normally his covers are, you know, above reproach. Yeah. But here, you know, just the way Dormammu's holding the dock, it looks like he's holding a fretboard of a guitar or something. And, you know, it also looks like he's got his ring finger and middle finger clamped on the dock's crotch. Because look at the dock.
Yeah. His middle finger's like tickling the dock's nutsack or something.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Ridiculous.
And yeah, it's who would hold anybody like that? Unless the dock has somehow managed to struggle free, partly free from his grip. And you know, the dock's leg, his right leg is twisted in a weird angle.
Looks bizarre.
It looks really crazy. It almost looks like he's trying to kick the flames off of Dormammu's head. And then, yeah, Clea hanging on to Dormammu's pinky there. It's just, it's nuts. And then, you know, yeah, she's drawn very... I don't know. It's not the Clea we're used to, like you say. Busty.
Twisted like crazy, too. Yeah, it sucks.
And her hairstyle doesn't look like Clea at all, you know? She looks like a grandma or something who just left the hair salon. And, yeah, no, I don't like this cover at all. Yeah, the cartoony aspect I can see now that you've pointed it out.
Yeah, it reminds me of like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, almost like... Like what are the ones from like the '70s, you know, not like the very early ones, but it's just very, very cartoony. It should be scary, you know, and it's not in the least.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that you put it well there. So other than that though, the story is fine. I really enjoyed it. You know, it's got great mystical battles, even though it's not the battle that I wanted. Like I hinted at in the beginning. They don't really fight Dormammu at the end. Because we realize that this is all a ploy by Umar. As soon as Dormammu gains his full strength, she had a spell in place that saps his strength and transfers it to her. And then Dormammu seemingly fades into nothingness, although he does return later on when Steven and Clea vanquish Umar. But first, you know, I love the fact that this has the one of the best reveals in Marvel Bronze Age, and that is Clea's parentage, right, Billy?
Yeah.
So we already know Orini was her father, but
does Clea know that Umar is her mother?
I don't think so. Nope,
I don't think at this point she did either. Yeah.
This is only for the benefit of the reader.
So that's huge. Yeah, that's huge.
The doc doesn't know, you know, either, so... Yeah, Dormammu shows up, and then this is some great Gene Colan art. I love the way he draws Dormammu.
Dormammu is
in Arizona in giant form. He towers above the Arizona cliffs, and then he grabs a couple of humans, tourists and some Native Americans who were there, and picks them up like toys and just scatters them to the winds, right? Just kills them, basically. Mm-hmm. Looks like he's tossing the one...
Yeah, he murders them.
Yeah, looks like he's tossing the one guy into the flames burning on his shoulders, on his head.
Mm-hmm. And the he's going to eat him.
Yeah, or looks like he's tossing him into his mouth. You're right. And this one lady plummets to her death. You know, the one that screams, eee! So Dormammu's just having the time of his life, just destroying, just like trampling this anthill filled with humans.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Doc and Clea arriving home in the Sanctum Sanctorum back from the Dark Dimension after escaping the clutches of Orini. And again, they're, you know, the Earth Mother, the Earth Spirit Gaia, she pleads for their help once more. But before that, Doctor Strange first has to go through the motions of being the Sorcerer Supreme because he's got an entourage of guests who came to visit him. But first he scolds Wong. Isn't that a little bit reprehensible there, Doc?
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
Wong shows up with this to introduce the guests. And the Doc says, you know, what is it, Wong? You know you're not to disturb me when I'm on this floor of the house. Life here is tenuous. And then Wong apologizes and he says, but, you know, you have urgent visitors. And it's Rama Khalif, Turim Barim, Lord Fifth. And Count Karezi. These are the mystics that Clea summoned, you know, two issues ago to help against, you know, with the battle.
Dormammu.
Against Dormammu. Now, Billy, these folks, they're mystics, but they don't have any power because the Doc just, he welcomes them, you know, politely, but he just says, sorry, you folks can't help me. You know, your powers are not up to snuff or they're disharmonious compared to mine.
Yeah.
So Doc, speak about this, you know.
they even realize this. I mean, I think it's Rama Khalif even says, like, the Dread Dormammu is too alien for any of us to know him exactly as he is. We each see him differently. So our spells against him would shriek in disharmony, which it's kind of a weird way to, you know, weasel your way out of them trying to help here. I almost wish they could have tried to help even in some small way. That's kind of about the only nitpick I would have about the whole story. Otherwise, the story is great, but that's kind of weird. That's like they're mystics. They can't help in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason even to then give them some page time here because I mean, we saw them in previous issues, and that should have been enough. Mm-hmm. But here, it probably shows their concern for what's happening. You know, still they're ineffectual. So they showed up for nothing, really. And then,
they're furniture.
Yeah, they're just furniture. Just, you know, chaff in the wind. And then the Doc, you know, after he sort of severely bruises their egos, he and Clea, they just disappear. And the Doc says, you know, though yet a novice, Clea, you are the only one who can stand with me now. And we may tarry no longer. And boom, they teleport out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the weather seems to be going nuts outside in New York because Dormammu's coming seems to have had an effect on the ecology and, you know, the world as a whole. And the weather.
Gaia's all messed up. Yeah,
Gaia, because of, you know, Gaia being out of it. And then, you know, we have this brief panel showing the dead junkie, not as dead as we might think, although he is technically dead, that Umar killed. And he still shudders and lies there. Dead? Question mark? Says Engelhardt. But then we cut back to Arizona where Dormammu's still wreaking havoc here, right? And then Umar shows up to congratulate her brother with his on his ascension. And then he says he's going to reward her, but she suspected this because after all, Dormammu has no need of his sister. And I think Dormammu also senses that she has ambitions beyond her, you know, social standing in his realm. So he banishes her, or tries to banish her, to a nether realm. But once he does that, she has the spell in place. This is all part of her plan all along, to siphon his energy into herself. So she grows to giant size. He shrinks like Hang Pym, you know, saturated with Pym particles. He just shrinks to nothing. And then we have this panel showing in a dank, shadowy cave, the aged Genghis mindlessly laughs. Now, this is Engelhart also like planting some seeds here for the next story coming, right, Billy? Where it's going to be revealed why this aged Genghis, who's one of the mystics that Strange knows and that Clea is aware of, he has been driven insane and will by dreams, and we'll find out how that plays into the next storyline later. But as soon as Umar gains her full power and she grows to giant size, Orini appears from the dark dimension, and he looks up at her. This is so comical, right, Belize? This little dwarfish man.
Yeah.
Look. Oh, man.
Here's what she says. He says, "Mistress, where is the master?" She says, "I am master now, little man. What is it?" Wow. Jeez.
Oh, and then he informs her of Steven's escape from the Quaranthi Guardian, which is seemingly impossible. It is literally impossible to do, but of course he did that with the help from Clea and so forth, or with the Eye of Agamotto as well. But she's suitably impressed by saying, so he is indeed the Sorcerer Supreme. That's her words. But then, you know, Orini appeals to her. He says, first she dismisses him. She says, "You were to watch the Dark Domain, disciple, return." And then he says, "Wait. Must you always treat me thus?" Because now that she's in power, he was hoping that he would probably, like, she would be free to do what he thought she would want to do, which is to be with the guy.
Shack up with him, yeah.
Yeah, like they did when it was still forbidden in their youth. Well, it was in his youth, not Umar, because he described her as always ageless, since she's like a goddess compared to him, a mere mortal. But he was a young man, quite a handsome young disciple, and then she approached him, and they, right there on the Dark Dimension, one of those wonky platforms probably, floating in limbo, they did it.
Yeah, he laid the pipe right there.
There you go. And then, right after it happened, she leapt back from him, shuddering. So she found this act gross. At first, she found it passionate, but once it was done, she was disgusted. And then she even says, "Gods, I had to know, I had to loose the humanity within me. But it's disgusting."
And he's got this look on his face like he's ready to cry.
Yeah. Man, he's devastated by what she says here. And then he starts talking about Clea. He says, "Six cycles later, you birthed the product of our love, which is Clea." And then he tries to appeal to her now from the angle of her having a daughter. But she just says, "Silence." And then he says, "I would serve you, Umar, in any way." And again, she says, "Silence!" She just dismisses
him. She knows
him.
The doc's coming. Yeah, she knows the doc's coming. Yeah.
Now this is a great classic mystical battle. I don't know what you think of this, Billy, but it shows how powerful the doc really is. Because Umar's now, I mean, she's a goddess in her own right, but now she has Dormammu's power as well. And she empowers Orini so that they have this two-pronged attack. He attacks Clea. And then the doc lays Orini out with these waves of mystical pain. And, you know, he freely gives his magic to Orini after Umar gave some magic to him. So Orini's down on one knee. And then he recovers because, after all, he's now, you know, boosted by Umar's magic. And then he sort of tries to dissolve Doctor Strange into mist. But, you know, Doctor Strange takes to the skies and then wraps up Orini in the crimson bands of Sidorak. But while they're doing this, the Doc and Clea have a plan, you know, because after all, they know that they can't take Umar head on since she's got Dormammu's power. So the Doc, again, he's using his chess player mind here. Right, Billy? And what is their plan here? What does the Doc, in fact, do? He gifts Clea with his power, and then what happens?
Yeah, he kind of like runs like a little bit of a distraction with Umar. So he's, you know, like flying around and like, you know, just basically trying to keep her attention away from Clea flying away. And Clea flies down and helps Gaia escape. And then, like you had said in your synopsis, you know, between the Doc, Clea, Gaia, and her basically channeling all the power of, you know, everybody and everything on Earth, that's how they're going to try to defeat Umar.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it turns out that when the Doc linked his soul to Clea, you know, during the Silver Dagger arc, and then later linked his mind to Clea during the capture, you know, and the when he was kidnapped and taken to the Dark Dimension, or when he was, you know, he went to the Dark Dimension on his own and was then defeated, I should say. When they linked minds, it basically opened up a channel between them, a mystical channel where the Doc could transfer his power to Clea at will, seemingly instantaneously, right, Billy? So that's what he did. He can, and they would do this a number of times in the future as well, where the Doc briefly empowers Clea to help him, to assist him. So, you know, and that works wonders here because Clea, you know, with the Doc's might, while he keeps Umar busy, she frees Gaia. And then Gaia, she uses the minds of every single living being and links it all to Doctor Strange and Clea's minds and then channel magic that way. And that's how they then defeat Dormammu when he returns. I mean, after all, after they defeated Umar and her magic flowed back into Dormammu, he reappeared. And then that's how they defeat Dormammu. Basically, it was all the minds, you know, linked. Every single animal mind, every human mind on Earth, linked in mystical union with Steven and Clea. And that banished Dormammu, or seemingly destroyed him. Because they say he's crushed by the force of a world. So, and it looks like it's just lightning striking him repeatedly, but it's also this mental pressure from the minds of, you know, that Gaia controls. And so Gaia is very happy with what Steven and Clea have done. She leaves them a gift, you know, as a thank you, and it's a rose. Or I think it's a rose. It might be a daffodil or something, but it's red.
Some kind of flower,
Yeah. And then, you know, Orini sort of regains consciousness and he has a final palaver with Clea, and then he says farewell, daughter. Even though he says nothing has changed, they're still enemies, and he's gonna take his unconscious mistress back to the Dark Dimension. He says goodbye, may we never meet again. Jeez. But Clea's not sad to see him go, right, Billy, because she's long since, you know, given up on her father.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just before Clea and the Doc, or just after the Clea and the Doc teleports back to New York, we see a bit of a breaking the fourth wall here. And we see that this comic that we've been discussing is, in fact, in the last two panels of this issue, it's being read by a reader, by us. And, know, the narration caption reads, they fade, the desert sun shines brightly, and all is calm once more, except for a fitful feeling in many minds that something special happened today. You know, that means us reading this comic. Fear not, it will fade. And then when whoever it is or us closes the comic, that's when it fades. There's something special. But you know, Billy, I didn't feel anything particularly special when I read this issue. You know, it's a good issue, but it's definitely not one of the best. So I don't know what Engelhardt was trying to say there, other than the fact that the Doc and Clea saved the entire world against Dormammu with the help of Mother Earth. I don't know. There was no greater message like, you know, we should, you know, in turn protect the Earth or preserve the Earth like you would find in an Alan Moore comic, you know, like we should... You know, there's no message like, there's no moral... really, other than the fact that Steven just mystically defeated her with a trick again, or defeated Dormammu as well with this master plan that he had.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe Engelhardt was feeling pretty good about himself and thought this was, you know, one of his best ever plots or something. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, this is technically the first time he wrote Dormammu, sort of. I mean, Dormammu has shown up in Engelhardt comics in the past, but this is the first big storyline in Doctor Strange, where we talked Dormammu again. The previous time, of course, that he showed up was in the Avengers Defenders War, where he teamed up with Loki. So Engelhard did have a hand in that storyline as well. But you know what I mean? This is technically the first time he wrote him as Doctor Strange's sole, you know, enemy. You know, he's his big bad coming back. And I'm happy with it. It's just not great. I would say it's very good. And that's it. Yeah. But you know, I love the revelation of Clea and Orini and Umar. That's a big deal.
You know, yeah, so I think that's pretty cool.
That's like one of the biggest bits of Doctor Strange mythology that we'll get from Engelhard. You know, so so well done there. Kudos to old Engelhard and to Gene Colan. Gene Colan just brings it. He's so steady. You can always rely on the man for excellence. Yeah, so there's no way I can criticize the art here. But, you know, we'll get to that when we do Bronze Age Brilliance and Mighty Marvel Mistapes. On to issue 10, Billy, your issue. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see, you know, what details you have for us and, of course, the synopsis. So I'll leave it to you.
Yeah, so we have Doctor Strange number 10 from 1975. And this is almost the same creative team. I mean, we've got Steve Englehart, writer, Gene Colan and Frank Chiaramonte on artwork. And then, but instead, we have a change up here on the colors. That is Al Wenzel and letters Tom Orzechowski, you know, a familiar name there. And then we have a cover by, once again, Gil Kane, but this time Tom Palmer as the inker. So a little bit of a difference on some of the creative team here, but not much. Really, the core people are there, Englehart, Colan, and Frank Chiaramonte. So, all right, I'll just dive right into the synopsis here. As Doctor Strange ponders his place in the universe and the amount of doorways he's opened lately, how they swing both ways, Baron Mordo cries out from a room upstairs, and Doctor Strange rushes to his side. He enters Mordo's mind and finds Nightmare running rampant. Outside the sanctum, Strange and Clea notice the sky darkening and the stars, and then form the shape of eternity. Strange then travels to the Himalayas to speak with the aged Genghis. The elderly mage has gone completely senile, though, and is no help to the doc. We do, however, once again see Nightmare and his minions. Steven then heads back to the sanctum for a showdown with eternity. But Eternity turns the battle inward on Steven, and we see he's not as together as we thought. Lastly, the near-insane Baron Mordo somehow releases his astral form and flies off into the night.
And then we get to the classic storyline, which we'll discuss in a month's time, Shadow Play. That's a good one. That's a really good one. But like I say, if you don't know what's going to happen in Shadow Play, then this issue is a little bit, you know, it's a little vague. It leaves things hanging in the air, not without really any form or substance to the plot. You know what I mean, Billy? But I do like it that, you know, finally Engelhart's dealing with Baron Mordo again and his insanity, because after all, you know, he witnessed the birth and the destruction and then the rebirth of a universe. So he witnessed the mind of God, which was not God at all.
Cizanek
becoming God, so it's technically God, and of course that drove him insane. Steven could handle it though. Mordo's been a guest of the Sanctum Sanctorum ever since Steven has tried to cure his madness,
and he's basically been locked in a room.
and I love the fact that, you know, Steven's efforts to cure his madness has been, it's been revealed that it's been hampered by Nightmare, because, you know, what is more powerful than your nightmares? The nightmares of an insane person. That's even more powerful than the nightmares of a sane human being. So Nightmare's been in there fueling his power, and obviously also fueling Mordo's power. And he's had his fingers in all the pies lately, Nightmare, because it turns out that it's, you know, he's been present even during the Dormammu storyline. He's been getting ready to basically take out Doctor Strange, because that's what he wants. That he was one of Doctor Strange's first enemies, right, bro? Billy, almost the very first, I would say, along with Mordo. So he's back, and I love Nightmare. I love me some Nightmare.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But don't you love the fact that the story opens with Steven talking about doorways, like you mentioned in your synopsis? It's true that he's been, you know, since he's protecting our reality against evil outer dimensions and so forth. Every time he breaches that dimension to go, you know, to cut the evil off at its source, you know, to rip out the root of that evil, he leaves a door unlocked, literally. Mm-hmm. You know, so when he re-enters our reality, that door is still open. So that's what he meant by it. It swings both ways. He could let things in, right, Billy? And that's sort of what happened with Mordo here. You know, Mordo's insanity, you know, having witnessed the birth of a universe, and that has sort of left an entrance for Nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, and Nightmare's now using this against Steven. And I love the fact that, you know, the issue opens with the screaming of Baron Mordo waking up Steven's house guests, the mystics from the previous issue. They've all decided to spend the night. Well, this could be a couple of nights later even than the previous issues, because after all, they came from all parts of the world. So now they're probably taking the time to see New York, and they've decided to stay over at the Sanctum. Steven has generously allowed this. You know, Baron Mordo awakens them because he's screaming.
Well, just two of them. The other two guys must be heavy sleepers.
Yeah. Or they might not have stayed over. Who knows what happened to them?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But, you know, Steven is soon drawn. Once he enters Mordo's room to sort of, like, I don't know, comfort him or find out why he's particularly, you know, acting up now, he enters into... into Mordo's mind. And then he's stuck in there with Nightmare. And that's how he knows who's the culprit here. And then he recovers himself, and he decides to get to the root of this. And then Clea sort of... Oh, Billy, you got to speak about this. Doctor Strange, his mind is on his mission. He has to find out what is happening here. And he thinks about Nightmare, he thinks about Mordo, but then his mind... turns to eternity, you know, because he remembers that the last time he encountered Nightmare was during the Shuma-Gorath debacle, and it involved eternity, you know, with the whole death, Steven becoming death, and he gaining the upper hand on death, and then eternity turned out to be death's sort of sibling.
Yeah.
And now, because if you remember, listeners, Steven had to become one with eternity in order to defeat death. And so then he starts thinking about eternity, and then, you know, it sort of like takes over his thoughts. And while he's like planning on what to do, suddenly what happens, Billy? This is a great scene. That's why I love Engelhardt. Engelhardt, he gets it, you know, human interaction.
The cloak of levitation like flips over Steven's head, and he's like, "What?" And he turns around, and there's Clea, and he's like, "Clea." She goes, "Yes, beloved, I'm the culprit, do you say?"
Oh my God, she's in a mood to play here, Billy. She's
she's horny.
Very horny. It's a booty call, and Steven, this is the worst time for him because he's got everything, you know, to deal with here. Eternity, Mordo, Nightmare, and Clea's just smiling at him. And then he scolds her as a teacher would scold a student. Now, Billy, this is some great dialogue. Do you want to read this to us?
Yes, she says, "I heard your step on the stairs, and it sounded so somber, I had to come tease you." What? And he goes, "There's good reason for that sound, Clea. I can't be bothered with such foolishness now." And she says, "Am I a bother to you, Stephen? I didn't know." And he says, "I speak as master to disciple, Clea. This doesn't concern our personal lives."
Not even teacher to student. Master to disciple. This is like Jesus... scolding Mary Magdalene or something. I don't know what this is, but oh my God. But then Clea just say, "So you say," and she just grabs him and gives him this huge kiss, this smooch right then and there. But then right at this moment, Steven seems to be succumbing to Clea's charms. I mean, who wouldn't? But then she also continues by saying, "Everything you do is personal with me, Steven. Even if I am your student." Uh-oh, we're getting into terrible territory here, right, Billy?
Here we go.
Then demons of Danak. And Steven is, "What in the gods?" And then Clea shouts, "Steven, the sky." And it looks like the sky is falling on top of the earth. Like, literally, space is edging closer to the earth and seemingly on a collision course with the earth. All the spheres of the stars, the planets, everything's you know, sort of like becoming bigger, and they're being magnified here. It looks like the Earth, you know, it's plummeting towards the Earth, like space is contracting or something and ready to crush the Earth. And this is a great panel there by Colin, right, Billy, when when the sky literally magnifies itself. And then they realize what happened. It's eternity. Eternity has, in his giant-like form, which is infinitely bigger than Galactus, he has approached the Earth. And this is basically like the universe taking notice of a speck of dust, or, you know, even smaller than that, much smaller than that. And then eternity has his attention firmly set on the Earth. And the people are freaking out all over New York. People, this is chaos, because what has happened to the sky? Why are all these planets suddenly so near? And, you know, these suns, distant suns from other universes, are now suddenly right on our doorstep. And Stephen quickly deals with the panic with a spell. Now, this shows you how powerful he is, right, Billy? He just speaks the spell. In the name of the eternal Vishanti, I conjure the illusion of reality for humanity's minds once more. And then the sky appears normal. The entire Earth is fine. You know, they're just, oh, it's just the, what happened? And one guy just says, I don't suppose nothing, mister. I'm just glad it's fixed. So they're just you're dismissing what happened here. So Stephen just quickly, like, saved them from insanity there. And then Stephen doesn't know what's happening. You know, why did eternity approach the Earth? So he decides to consult the aged Genghis. And Billy, now speak on this. This is when he discovers that the aged Genghis is not, you know, all there. You know, he's kind of a, you know, the engine's running, but, you know, he's asleep at the wheel a little.
The engine's running, but the car can't get out of park. He's basically just a vegetable now.
Yeah.
And he's just sitting there, and Stephen kind of, like, I don't know if he helps him get up or he uses his magics to kind of get him to stand up and start walking. But as they're walking away, it's this crazy panel by Colin where he's like, it says, when suddenly slime-hung tentacles burst upon them both. And then all of a sudden, you see these, like, tentacles, like, wrapping the two of them up. And it's the doc says, there's a sensation to this. I felt it before. It's the same as Baron Mordo's madness.
Yeah,
like, it's just crazier and crazier, yeah.
So then, you know, the very next page has the panel of Stephen teleporting away back to to New York. Or he was in his astral form, so he's returning to his body, I should say. And then it segues into a panel where Mordo's madness is plaguing him with nightmare riding his nightmare, the horse, through Mordo's mind. So obviously this is nightmare that has also driven the aged Genghis insane. I mean, he was already senile, and that led to insanity. And now, you know, nightmare also, he advanced the condition even further. And is what he's doing with Mordo too. But Mordo, obviously having a younger mind, he's still got more energy left in him. So Nightmare sort of animates Mordo. He drives him from his room in the Sanctum Sanctorum, and Mordo escapes. And that's when Stephen returns to his body. But he doesn't have time to worry about Mordo now. He has to worry about eternity. So the only way that he can approach eternity is through the Eye of Agamotto, right, Billy? And the eye again leaves Stephen's amulet and attaches itself to his forehead.
What a page. Whoa.
And then he enters the eye, seemingly, it is this third eye of his, and then he becomes one with eternity. And this is a great page, because as Stephen's thinking, he thinks, I'm growing, emerging, becoming one with, and then eternity completes his thought for him. Eternity, Doctor Strange. And now Stephen can speak to eternity, because previously he couldn't in his physical form. He needed to somehow activate the Eye of Agamotto to help him out. And eternity basically says that he's had enough of the Earth. You know, humanity, this seems to be not the end of the universe. It seems to be just the end of the Earth. You know, it's like eternity, the universe has turned on Earth because of all the troubles of mankind. And because he says the humans are too finicky, too, you know, mercurial, their psyches are in opposition with their desires, and that's causing them to lash out against the universe. He's just had enough. You know, so when Stephen tries to reason with eternity, to say that, I tell you, that we have not reached the point of change. Because eternity says something interesting. He says, for there to be new creation, there must first be destruction. Right, Billy? Every period of expansion leads to an eventual period of contraction. And you know, that's one of the theories of the universal expansion that explains the movement of the universe. It says that, you know, at the moment it's a fact that our universe is expanding. But one day it might, once gravity collapses in on itself, this force that is expanding the universe, we might all collapse into an infinitely small point again, which will again one day lead to a second or a third, or we don't know how many Big Bangs there have been up to this point, but it might lead to another expansion, like a Big Bang explosion that would birth another universe. You know, so that's one of the theories out there. So this is basically eternity echoing that theory.
Yeah, he says, call it Twilight of the Gods, call it Ragnarok, call it Judgment Day. You have always known in your soul it would come, and it has. So that's what he's basically saying. Like, you know, the universe is a barrel of apples, and the one apple is Earth, and it's bad, and it's got to get taken out.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good analogy, man. And then Stephen says, I tell you that we have not reached this point of change. And then Eternity just asks the Doc a question. He says, then you will contend against my word? And Stephen says, yes! And Eternity just, no. He just says no. And yeah, then he makes Stephen see the trouble. He says, look at all your disparate selves. You know, you've got the arrogant, drunken doctor. Oh, the arrogant doctor. Then you've got the drunken sot after he lost the use of his hands. You've got
I love that.
The neophyte magician, subservient to the whims of the ancient one. And you've got the masked Doctor Strange, who's a totally different personality than you are right now. How are you going to deal with all these different aspects of your psyche? And these are basically the reasons for you know, one of humanity's evils is because we're all different people vying for control inside your own head. And this is where we get into the whole question of madness and consciousness and subconsciousness that Engelhardt's going to be dealing with in the coming issues. And then Eternity fades away, right, Billy? And then we see the epilogue where Baron Mordo is sort of on the rooftop of the Sanctum Sanctorum, and he just astrally... He manages to somehow, in his madness, still astrally project and leaves his body. And it says, before freeing his astral form for flight, he could never say why, but he knows the madness has only just begun. So he's been mad, but now we enter a realm of supercharged insanity.
Well, yeah.
Courtesy of our old friend Nightmare. And next, Shadow Play.
Yeah, it's a good one coming up.
I can't wait. And that also features one of my favorite Doctor Strange covers, the covers to issue 11. Which will unfortunately only get two in a month's time. But wow, that's a great cover. Oof, gonna have fun with that
one. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, Billy, man, pretty enjoyable issues. But like I said, as a kid, I found this very opaque. I didn't know what was going on, really. I was left in the dark by this storyline. Like, why did Eternity show up? His explanation didn't make sense. Why does he want to end humanity? And then Mordo with the madness and the nightmare angle, all of that, I just didn't know. And where was the junkie? I mean, the junkie was shuddering all over the place in the previous issue. I thought that was leading into him becoming a zombie or something in this issue. Nope. No, that was just part of his death throes and the death throes of the Umar and Dormammu storyline. That's all it was. And so basically, you know... But, you know, if you read the entire Shadowplay storyline, you really appreciate how Engelhardt sort of set it up. And this being the introduction to that story, you kind of have to be patient. And then you'll enjoy it when the, you know, the reveal is made. But, Billy, I mean, that leaves us open for some Bronze Age brilliance and Mighty Marvel missteps. I'm not going to, you know, insert a break here. We're going to launch straight into that. You can go first. What are some of your Bronze Age Brilliance moments and Mighty Marvel missteps in both issues?
Okay, so for number 9, the Bronze Age Brilliance for me was Umar turning the tables on Dormammu. I really enjoyed that. I didn't see that coming when I first read it, you know, because you're thinking, you know, Dormammu, you're thinking to yourself, he's so powerful and nobody can really, you know, overcome him. It was going to be a struggle for the doc. And you did see, you know, Umar plotting up to this point, but I didn't think she was going to be able to pull it off, but she did. So that's definitely my Bronze Age brilliance for issue number 9.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me as well. Yeah, that was a great surprise. Yeah, Bronze Age brilliance for me was the presence of Clea as an equal to the doc, even though she's not his equal in mystical might. She mm-hmm. is basically a main character along with Doctor Strange in most of the storylines. Now, that will not happen in coming storylines featuring, you know, the culmination of the Shadowplay arc and the Dracula storyline. But mm-hmm. here she's still firmly Strange's equal in terms of story time and mm-hmm. panels devoted to her. And she's so lovely and beautiful. I always love seeing Clea on the page. So that was my Bronze mm-hmm. Age brilliance. Clea being an integral part of the defeat. And, you know, it makes sense because, after all, Mother Earth as a woman was suffering. And Clea mm-hmm. as a woman freed her. And then they together defeated Umar and Dormammu. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Umar being unable to accept her human side, you know, so she has no empathy. She couldn't put herself in the shoes of the suffering of this, of Mother Earth, whereas Clea could. You know, Clea was able to
right.
to project herself into Mother Earth's pain. Mm-hmm. And that's why Mother Earth approached her in the first place, you know, to make her aware of her plight. But also because Clea was linked to the dark dimension, which was causing this pain. In the form of Dormammu. You know, and then the Orina storyline, it was all about Clea, really, and I love that. So mm-hmm. I'm saying the Clea angle was my Bronze Age brilliance. And Billy, what about mm-hmm. your Mighty Marvel missteps?
So for 9, yeah, the only thing I could really say to me was a huge misstep that I thought just I did not care for was, you know, going back again to the cover. I just was, oof. The rest of the issue I thought was pretty good, but the cover, man, it's oof. That's to me the big time low spot for issue.
That's exactly my Mighty Marvel misstep too. That cover is inexcusable. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had a couple of great covers up to this point, and then suddenly this mm-hmm. this one pops up, and oh, you know, you're just reminded of how one, like you say, bad apple in the bunch could ruin the rest too. to steal your analogy there, this cover mm-hmm. did that for me. I was not impressed by this cover. Mm-hmm. And you know, it shows up if you read the Marvel Masterworks, you know, which I do. They include the covers. I should mention, though, these two issues are not just in Marvel Masterworks issue 5. It's in 5 and 6. Marvel Masterworks 5 ends with issue 9 and then starts up again with Marvel Masterworks number 6 with issue 10. And they include mm-hmm. the covers. And, you know, it's so jarring to see these covers. But the cover to issue 10, you know, I really like. You know, I'm going to say it's not a bad cover at all. It's not one of the greats. But I'm not going to say that it's not even close to the horribleness of the cover of 9.
No.
So I don't know how you feel. I mean, obviously about the next cover, not fantastic either. But you know, not
yeah, it's okay.
Bad. It's okay. It's
not not bad. The bait and switch bothers me more than anything.
Yeah, art-wise. He's not going to face Dormammu. He's not going to face Baron Mordo. He's going to face Eternity.
No.
And Eternity is in the background there. That's what I like about the cover, the fact that Eternity becomes the background. It's always great when they use him as a setting, because after all, he is a place, and more than that. But Mordo, would not be the antagonist here. They could have included Nightmare. They could have included, mm-hmm. But, you know, not that I mind. I mean, technically, Mordo is going to be a major part of the storyline. But I like the fact that they're also on these platforms, which does not look like the Dark Dimension. It looks like they're on a, you know, a volcanic type of plateau where the ground's falling in, this fire and smoke and lava rising from the floor. And then they're mm-hmm. clearly in a mystical battle. The Doc's cape looks a little bit weird, but, mm-hmm. you know, this cover, like I say, is much better than the cover to 10, but still not great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a little bit of Mighty Marvel missteps there in terms of the cover to issue 9, and that's it for us, right, Billy?
Mm-hmm. Bronze Age brilliance for 10 for me is definitely the Engelhart dialogue. I mean, you know, we said about the first page, you know, where the doc's looking in the mirror and he says about doorways, and then the next page you flip and it says doorways. Can it be that I've opened too many of them? For days now, yes, and most especially nights, I felt the shadow of some lurking fear falling Stygian across my shoulders. Only I could have sensed its sinister presence, for only I am the Sorcerer Supreme, and yet the Sorcerer Supreme is but a man, treading warily through the unknown realms of gods. And it just keeps going, and man, is it good. The dialogue there, the captions are just incredible.
No, it's fantastic. You know, I love the fact that, you know, the conversation, the repartee he has with Clea, you know, when she's trying to tease him, and then throws him off, and then she wins him over, you know, with her with her touch, but also with her reasoning. She's saying, I don't care if you're my master and I'm your disciple. I want what I want. And you're going to give it to me. And you know, the funny thing is, during these two issues, especially during issue 9, Clea keeps calling the doc my man.
Yes.
And that's not in a cool bro kind of sense. You know, like, my man. No. It's not like that at all. It's more like, he's my man. You know, he's such a man, and he is my man. Oh man, it's funny. Oh, there I go with the man thing. A man thing. That's probably what she's looking for from Steven. Oh no. So yeah, brilliant dialogue by Englehart, a brilliant characterization, you know, coming through in the dialogue of both Clea and the Doc.
Yeah, for sure.
So, buddy, we're going to take a little bit of a break here. And then we're going to head into our next segment, which is Shop Talk. So don't go away, listeners. Stay with us. We'll be back in a jiffy. WSKID,
Skid Row Radio. You're listening to radio station WSKID, home of the hits. And in just a few minutes, we'll be bringing you Wink Wilkinson's Weird World, the show that talks to wonderful people who bring in their weird things.
And now Wink Wilkinson's Weird World with your host, Wink Wilkinson. Everybody, it's Weird Wink Wilkinson laughing and scratching at you. How's everybody doing today? I got a little bit of a stiff neck. Let me just fix this up. Ooh, that feels a lot better. Well, I got a great show for you today with some wonderful weird stuff. What are you doing here? What? You? Please, lady, don't. Put your clothes back on. It's Wink Wilkinson. You can't do this to me. What if your husband were to walk in? I'm right here, Wink. I'm sorry. I love your show, but I've got to kill you both with this machine gun. Oh, you got me. Oh, I feel so very weird.
All right, we're back with Shop Talk. Okay, Billy, I think you don't have anything to bring to the table this time. We discussed this off mic. I have a couple of things, but I want you to chime in here with some thoughts, because for some reason, I seem to be very busy during the last 2 weeks catching up on you know, movies and TV shows and so forth, and normally I don't have time to work in as much as I did during the last 2 weeks, but somehow I managed it, and I don't know how. Maybe it's just because of the quality of the content, you know, and I knew it was going to be good, so I really, you know, went out of my way to make time and cut some of my sleeping time short as well, although it didn't feel like it. Yeah, I was full of energy these last 2 weeks. So first off, I want to talk about, it's not an elephant in the room, but it's something, since we're doing a Doctor Strange podcast, Marvel Bronze Age Doctor Strange mostly, but we kind of have to mention this. I did go to the shop last week, a comic book store here in Taipei, New Taipei City, and I went to pick up my regular call order, and I picked up The Death of Doctor Strange. And first off, I'm not going to provide too many spoilers, but I'm going to give my honest you know, opinion here. I liked it a lot. I'm not going to say I loved it, but I liked it a lot. It was a fantastic read. It was a fine, maybe I shouldn't use the word fantastic. Let's say it was a great read. In my mind, fantastic means better than great. So I'm just going to go for great. I don't just want to say good, because it's definitely better than good. I would give it like maybe a score out of 10. I would have to go for a 7, you know, 7.7 out of 10. So what happens here? Yes. It's exactly as it's teased on the titles. Doctor Strange is gonna, well, he dies, you know, that's, and I'm not gonna spoil too much. He does die, but you know, it's not, all is not lost, Billy, because the Marvel Universe for me cannot exist without Stephen Strange. Just like the DC Universe probably couldn't exist without, let's say, Wonder Woman, Superman, or Batman. Now, I'm not saying Doctor Strange is one of the big three, like, let's say Cap, Thor, or Spider-Man, or who else would be? Iron Man, I guess.
Iron Man, yeah. Yeah,
but he's definitely a part of the Silver Age Marvel universe. You know, Hulk, the Avengers, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, they are essential parts of Marvel's genesis. So how can you do away with Doctor Strange? You can't. And I'm glad that, you know, the creative team and editorial, of course, realized that. You know, you can't do away with Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm saying all is not lost. So you Doctor Strange fans out there who have not read this yet, don't despair, because it has a really great revelation at the end. So The Death of Doctor Strange, written by Jed McKay, art by Lee Garbett, and Antonio Fabella on colors. I loved it. I mean, the art was really good. Lee Garbett, I'm not familiar with the guy. I know he's been around Marvel for a while, but I can't recall anything he's done because I don't read a lot of modern comics. Jed McKay, I'm completely in the dark on, but he's a great writer just from what he wrote here. The dialogue pops, and this whole thread that runs through the story with Steven thinking about this character from Russian mythology called Koshei the Deathless. And if there are any Mike Mignola fans from Dark Horse Comics out there, you might remember Mike Mignola did a whole Koshei the Deathless story arc for Dark Horse Comics. And this is a character, like I said, from Russian mythology who's cheated death. And so there you have your first hint of what's coming, right? This character who cheated death is something that Steven is thinking about a lot. And, you know, of course, he's got his entourage with him. You know, Clea's not there, but he keeps looking at her picture, missing her. And Wong is there, you know, the best Wong that I've seen depicted since, let's say, Doctor Strange, The Oath. Although, you know, I haven't read a lot of Doctor Strange comic in the interim, so there might have been other great depictions of Wong. Who knows? But still, you know, wow, Wong's, he's portrayed well. And then Steven walks through Greenwich Village with his little ghost dog in tow. And, he's a surgeon again, as we know, in a recent arc, Surgeon Supreme, he regained the use of his hands. You know, so he's got that going for him. He takes on some threats to our reality in this issue, showing off his incredible magical power. He's still the Sorcerer Supreme, fully powered. He goes to teach at Strange Academy and has a nice little conversation with Doyle Dormammu. You know, the son of Dormammu, who's one of the kids there at the academy. And he teams up with Ilyana to battle these demons. And, you know, it's just great. And you see, like, Steven, it's sort of like a farewell to the Marvel mystical universe through the eyes of Doctor Strange. And you know what's coming. And then he's chilling at home and someone shows up and, yeah. And then, you know, he dies. He's killed. He's killed by a foe with superior magical strength. And, but then I'm not going to spoil the reveal at the very end of the issue. You kind of have to read it for yourself. Those of you who have already read it, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, it's great. Read it. Chapter 2 is coming, The Lonely Death of Doctor Strange. And that'll be out in a month's time, I think. So I'm in for this comic. I'm definitely going to have a look at what's happening. Now, it does have a checklist, you know, at the end of the issue. You're going to have to buy multiple sort of comics. This is like an event, right, Billy? So you've The Death of Doctor Strange. You've got Death of Doctor Strange Avengers number 1. Then you've got Strange Academy Presents The Death of Doctor Strange. Then you've got Death of Doctor Strange Spider-Man. The Death of Doctor Strange White Fox. Death of Doctor Strange Blade number 1. All of these are number 1 issues. Death of Doctor Strange X-Men Black Knight. And then Death of Doctor Strange it wraps up in number 5. So, yeah. So I don't know if I'm going to collect all of that. I'm probably just going to collect the main series. I mean, I didn't even put the rest on my call order because I was just made aware of this when I finished the comic and saw this checklist for the Death of Doctor Strange at the back. So, I'm not going to read that. I'm just going to see if I can suss out what the main storyline is by reading this limited series here from issue 1 to 5. Anyway,
well,
what do you think about that?
Usually, I haven't. It sounds pretty interesting. And look, I haven't read any big events from Marvel in a long time, but the last few that I had read, and I did buy like every ancillary tie-in type thing, I came to the realization that you would have been just fine buying like the Spine series it would have been fine buying that and reading that. Like a lot of times these other ones they throw in there, it's very little, you know, to do with the main story. It's like you still would get all the main story and all the best parts just buying the Doctor Strange title.
You know, yeah, this got me thinking to what we talked on our previous episode of Into the Weird, where we discussed Marvel's What If. You know, we referenced the recent Jason Aaron event, what was it, Original Sin, featuring the Orb and the Death of the Watcher and so forth, and Nick Fury. And, you know, I found that just picking up the trade and just reading the main Original Sin storyline gave me everything I needed to know. You know, I wasn't reading it in comics at the time, but I recently did pick up the trade as well, you know, because it was fresh in my mind when you and I discussed it. And then after I read through the trade, I realized, oh, I did actually read some of the comics that Grant recommended to me way back when, digitally.
Yeah.
You know, because I was still on Comixology at the time. It was a year or two after the event, so, you know, they were available on Comixology, you know, the subscription service. So, you know, I find that, you know, that's what they're doing these days. They're definitely writing it for the trade, but they're also then eventually released a hardcover or something. I'm not sure if they did that for Original Sin, but they do that where they collect everything, you know. But I'm not going to go in for that omnibus style, you know, event hardcovers. I'm just going to focus on the main event. And even the, you know, with the Secret Wars recently, you know, which Sean Ross wrapped up on his Secret Wars and Beyond show with Greg Caruso. They, you know, if you read the main Secret Wars title, you know, that's fine. That gives you everything you need to know, sort of, because they sort of summarize what's been happening in the beginning of the comic. And that's enough. That's all I needed to understand. And the storyline was not, you know, obscured, you know, by the spin-off titles at all. So, yeah, Billy, I would recommend this, man. I'm not saying you should pick it up. Maybe wait for the trade or something. If it's great, I'll let you know if all five issues turn out to be winners. And if they are, you might have to pick this up.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, that's the Spine series. Like I said, that probably sounds pretty interesting to me.
Yeah. And then art-wise, I think you'll be happy with. It's not too much digital, you know, kind of looking art, which is something you and I don't particularly like these days. You can see the digital coloring, even though everybody's doing it this way these days. You know, I like to see some texture to my colors, which digital coloring can affect these days. But, you know, whatever. This was a great issue. And then, you know, Billy, last week, like we mentioned, or 2 weeks ago, I think, our What If issue dropped. And I've since watched two Marvel What Ifs from Disney Plus since our last recording. So episode 6 of Marvel What If on Disney Plus, the animated series they've got there. What if Killmonger rescued Tony Stark? You know Killmonger from a Black Panther movie, the enemy of Black Panther there. What if he was part of the military group that was somehow escorting Tony Stark in the start of Iron Man 1, you know, the first Iron Man movie when he was attacked you know, by the terrorists, and then he, you know, the shrapnel entered his heart during that explosion. But what if Killmonger saved him? And then, you know, it turns out Killmonger and Iron Man became best buds. And he created, you know, he helped Killmonger to, you know, with his technology to essentially create this vibranium super suit. And then eventually Killmonger led Tony and the rest of S.H.I.E.L.D. to have a war against Wakanda. You know, stuff like that. So it's basically Killmonger still wanting revenge on the country of his, well, not his birth, but, you know, where his father came from. You know, for what they did to his dad. So this is all tied in with the Black Panther movie, of course. Now, I didn't like this one much, you know, Billy, because the ending is sort of the bad guy wins, the bad guy triumphs, and Pepper and Shuri are left to sort of become the rebels who secretly plot to take him down. But he essentially becomes the Black Panther like he did in the movie. But, you know, I didn't like the way that it flowed, really. But it's just personal preference, you know. I'm not saying it was a bad episode. And then the next one, Billy, you will be incredibly upset by, because you remember what we hated the most about Thor Ragnarok is this jokey side to the character. Now, lots of people love it. I'm fine with it. You know, Marvel Universe is known for its funny jokes. I find it fine if they tone it down a little bit. But okay, I should say episode 7. What if Thor were an only child? So what if Odin never adopted Loki, what if he returned him to his Frost Giant family? What if Thor grew up without Loki to sort of challenge him and sort of make him more responsible, you know, in the face of Loki's mischief that he had to deal with? So basically what happens is Thor became a party bro. You know, he became this he had no challenges in his life, no evil really to fight. So whenever Odin enters the Odin sleep, he would go all across the universe, all across the nine realms, with his entourage of friends, just partying it up. And this is the storyline where he comes to Earth, because this is the only world where his mom would probably not, which Heimdall would probably not have an eye on, because it's such a backwater planet, you know, that Heimdall won't be able to report him to his mom. You know, so he comes to Earth and they really ruin the Earth with this party that they've got going on. Jane Foster detects his coming and she thinks it's an alien invasion, but then she sees it's Thor, she falls in love with him, and then S.H.I.E.L.D. Gets involved, because after all they see that, you know, Thor, they're having a party, everybody loves Thor, but, you know, they're devastating every city they party in. Las Vegas is a mess, Sydney, Australia is completely trashed. You know, and it's not just Thor and the Asgardians. This is everybody from the Marvel Cosmic Universe that has shown up in the MCU films. The Guardians of the Galaxy characters are there. The folks from Ragnarok are there. You know, Meek and Korg and all of those people. So, you know, they're trashing the place. The Frost Giants get in on it because it turns out Loki and Thor are best buds. Even though Loki is now the Prince of the Frost Giants, they're friends. So Thor invites the Frost Giants to Earth for a party. You know, and they turn London into an amusement park by rolling the London Eye, the giant Ferris wheel, right through the city, you know, stuff like that. So it's this Thor being this mess, you know, because he's this happy-go-lucky, you know, frat boy party animal. But then listen, Billy, this is the part you will like. Nick Fury's injured by one of the party stunts just as he shows up to talk to Thor about this. And then Maria Hill is left in charge. So she finds Nick Fury's pager. Now, we know who that little pager summons, right? The only person powerful enough to deal with Thor, who's completely trashing the Earth, is, of course, Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. So, Maria Hill pages Captain Marvel. And she shows up, and there's a massive smackdown between her and Thor. Now, this is what we've been looking for ever since we saw, Avengers Endgame? You know, where we saw Thor and Captain Marvel sort of squaring off against each other, but not quite. He just says, I like this one, right? That sort of left all the fans wondering, what would happen if Thor had to fight Captain Marvel? And there's a fantastic, globe-spanning battle between them, and it's epic. You know, Billy, but the character of Thor, though, is this idiot, you know, this irresponsible idiot, and he's still got all his power. So that's the part you won't like. But dude, the end is almost better than the ending of, you know, the Marvel Zombies episode, which is, I think, episode 5, because I don't want to spoil the ending to anybody, you know, who's listening, who hasn't watched it yet, but the ending will blow you away. It's kind of like an oh shit moment, you know, like whoa, you won't believe who shows up at the end. And since it's an alternate universe, they're dealing with their own problems, right? But this could spill over into all universes, this ending, and this person, this group of people really who show up, but led by this one particular person who's familiar but also not familiar. So I don't want to tease more. I'll maybe tell you off mic if you're not planning on watching it soon. But I think our listeners should go and see for themselves, because it's fun. It's fun, you know. Just the characterization of Thor is not good, but it's a what if, so, you know, who cares?
Yeah. See, to me, that's the thing. If they have a series like What If and they do like kooky, crazy stuff and fat, crazy party Thor, that's cool. I got no beef with that at all. It's just when it's, oh, that's the main continuity guy, that's what really pissed me off. And a what if? That's a great idea, actually.
Yeah, it's a fun idea. And you know, it is funny when the character, or it's wrong if the character changes direction. It goes like 180 degrees in a different direction, because as we know, Thor started out in the MCU, directed by Kenneth Branagh in Thor 1 and then Thor 2. Now, they weren't great movies, but his character was completely different than what we got once, you know, Josh Whedon got his hands on him, and then, of course, Taika Waititi. So suddenly he just changed into comedy Thor. It just doesn't make sense for me, you know?
Dreadful.
So, yeah, dreadful. But anyway, some people love it, you know, each to his own. I don't begrudge them for loving Fat Thor and Funny Thor. Yeah, I mean, there are some legitimately funny moments. But I'm saying the Hulk is funnier than Thor, you know, in that movie, in Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, dude, on to the next Shop Talk thing. I know this is long-winded, but there's more, because I saw a lot of stuff. All right. Mm-hmm. My wife, Erin, and I, we finally got some time and to ourselves early in the morning, and we invaded a movie theater here in Taipei. Now, Taipei's not on lockdown anymore. We're on level 2, which means shops are open. All the schools are open. You can go shopping. It's just, you know, not a lot of people are allowed in stores, of course. There's a limited amount of folks allowed. And the movie theaters are not doing well, but they're open. So we went in the morning when we both had some time off in the morning, and then we went to see Denis Villeneuve's Dune, you know, Dune Part 1 of the classic Frank Herbert novel, last adapted by David Finch, if you don't count the Dune TV series, the two miniseries that showed up. But the David Finch movie was one of my childhood favorites, but now that I'm older, I can honestly say it's not a good movie, but I love it. You know, because it was such a seminal part of my childhood. I had the action figures. Right. That's what got me into reading the books. My dad taking me to see that movie. Love it. So this movie I had high hopes for. I had high expectations for, because after all, we saw Denis Villeneuve doing Blade Runner 2049. That was a tour de force. That was fantastic. I loved it. And Dune did not disappoint. It was everything I wanted and more. I'm just saying, lots of folks are complaining about the pacing, you know, it being a slow movie. There's lots of, you know, times when they just show scenery of Arrakis or scenery of Caladan or the planets, you know, or space. And, but I don't mind, because it all works with the pacing of the film as a whole, you know, and when you do get action, it's spectacular. And it's very true to the novel, but there's some extra Villeneuve bits put in there, and they work, you know, Billy. So I'm saying fantastic adaptation of Dune. Now, I read on Twitter recently that it hasn't aired in the States yet, or I might be mistaken, but it might be available now. But yeah, it's already here in Taipei. It started last week, you know, Thursday, I think it was, that it opened here.
Yeah, I know a lot of times you guys get the movies like a couple days before we do over here.
It's kind of like they want to try out the market first to see how it goes for some reason. I don't know why particularly they do that. But yeah, we sometimes do. Sometimes it's the same day and date release as you guys. Yeah.
I'm seeing here it's not coming out until closer to Halloween over here.
Whoa. Okay, so
yeah, almost a month.
Then you've got something to look forward to, listeners, because I think most of our listeners are in North America. There's a lot of folks in the rest of the world as well, but predominantly, you know, most of our listeners are from the States or from Canada. So you guys have got something to look forward to. But this novel is one of my favorites of all time, and the adaptation is fantastically done. So well done to Denis Villeneuve there. Just trust me, he did not disappoint. So go and watch it if you can when it's available there. And then, Billy, we've got another thing that I recently finished. I don't know how, like I say, I worked in the time, but I binge watched it on HBO. The new season of Doom Patrol, you know, has started. Doom Patrol season 3. First 3 episodes were released. First one wrapping up the Candlemaker story, and then episode 2 and 3 going right on into the new season. Because as we know, you know, the ending of season 2 was kind of interrupted by COVID. So they did not film that until later. And they sort of wrapped up the Candlemaker storyline very abruptly. But I wasn't dissatisfied with how they wrapped that up. But I loved what came next in episode 2 and 3. So I'm going to say this is great. And because the Doom Patrol season 3 has started, that also means Waiting for Doom by Paul Hicks and Mike Garvey is back. The Doom Patrol podcast, Waiting for Doom. And I listened to their newest episode. I think it was only released yesterday as of this recording. So when this is released, this episode, it will already be a, a, a week old or something, but still, listen to Waiting for Doom, because they discussed the Doom Patrol, a new season. And they also talk some other stuff, of course. It's great to listen to those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what I've been doing, you know. Death of Doctor Strange, What If, Dune by Denis Villeneuve, and Doom Patrol on HBO Go. That's what I have for Shop Talk. So, listeners, I hope I didn't bore you to tears. I hope all of this is in your wheelhouse. I'm pretty sure it is. You know, we're of like minds here on Into the Weird. And talking about weird, I mean, nothing gets weirder than Doom Patrol. Mm-hmm. Possibly not even Marvel Bronze Age could compare with that level of weirdness. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. But, Billy, that gives us a chance to take another break. I definitely need a swig of water here. So while I'm soothing my parched throat here, we're going to take a break and play a promo. But we'll be back after Dormammu, introduces our recommendations of Ragador. So again, listeners, stay with us. Don't go away. Stellar Studios presents An Into the Weird and A World on Fire production.
Starring, in alphabetical order,
Brainwave Jr.,
Fury,
Jade,
Northwind,
Nuklon,
Obsidian,
The Silver Scarab,
The Star-Spangled Kid.
These are the members of Infinity Inc., the protégés and children of the legendary Justice Society.
Created by Roy Thomas, Jerry Ordway, and Mike Macklin, their 1980s adventures are chronicled at last by Herman Lowe and Billy Dee, two podcasters with way too much time on their hands, but dedicated to analyzing, glorifying, and sometimes vilifying the stories from the team's first series.
So hop in your Star Rocket Racer, switch on the radio, and let's rediscover the Earth 2 we'd all like to go back to. Star Rocket Radio, an Infinity Inc. podcast. Soaring through the Podosphere since September 2021.
Once again, it is I, the Dread Dormammu, rest to deal with the recommendations of Ragador. All because of the silly promise I made old Rags when we were young and rambunctious. Ooh, if I could go back in time, if that time stone were still mine. But be that as it may, let's deal with a more pressing issue. Did my ears deceive me? Or that I just discerned that Billy and Herman, those two idiots from Into the Weird, have decided to tackle yet another podcast. Again, covering DC Comics-related material. Once again, they're betraying their alma mater, Marvel, and also this Dormammu, making my vengeance that much more imminent. Still, it could be enjoyable if I didn't have such a disdain for the villains of DC. Oh, Trihumanite, don't make me laugh. And what about that fool Darkseid? A ripoff of Thanos, if I ever saw one. Wait a minute, what's that? Speak up, man, I can't hear you. Orini, what, you say Darkseid came first? Really? Darkseid came first? Are you sure about that? Oh, all right, I know what happened here. That traitorous Jack Kirby must have stolen one of the Infinity Stones, probably the Time Stone from Jim Starlin, then gone back into time after being inspired by Thanos, and then creating Darkseid before Thanos was conceived by Jim Starlin, and thus changing comic book reality as we know it. That's the only explanation. for DC offering up a villain greater than Thanos. Still, he does not have my respect. Oh no. The only respect I give is to, of course, myself. So stick around for the recommendations. Listeners, they might just teach you something. So until we meet in your inevitable fiery apocalypse, pleasant screams.
Alright, we're back with the recommendations of Ragador. Billy, as ever, I'll let you go first. I'm really looking forward to your recommendation. What do you have on the slate?
Okay, so this is going to be something that I'll let you know what's in the book. It's a trade paperback, but I'm not going to get too specific about a lot of the stories because I know at least one of them, if not more than one of them, we are going to talk about on Into the Weird in the future. We kind of lightly touched on one of the best stories in this collection one time during a specific episode, but this is Warlock by Jim Starlin, the complete collection.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay, no. This is my Marvel Cosmic ride here. Cosmic Bronze Age. Oh, Billy, okay, speak on this. This is a fantastic, the complete collection, you say? I'm holding it in my hand right as we speak. I just pulled it off the shelf. What a beauty. Mm-hmm. Collecting Strange Tales 178 to 181, Warlock 9 to 15, all the Starlin stuff, The Avengers Annual number 7, and Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 2, all from the 70s. Oh, love it. This is the mega storylines in here. Thanos, Gamora, Pip the Troll. Oh, this is glorious. Man, what a pick. Counter-Earth. Okay, well, this is coming off of the Counter-Earth storyline, you know, right after the High Evolutionary, of course, had, you know, he gifted him with the soul gem. And then when he left Counter-Earth, this is where he heads into space, right? But now I see where your Counter-Earth connection comes from.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's why I kind of thought, oh, that's interesting that you said that. So, and like you said, we don't talk about these things ahead of time either, so.
Yeah,
it was a surprise.
It's a little bit of overlap there between our, mental states there, you know, because I've been thinking a lot about Warlock lately. I don't know why. It's just, it's always in my mind. You know, I love it. It's one of my favorite Marvel ever series. If you want to listen to some good Warlock coverage, check out Al Sedano's Warlock and Thanos podcast, you know, Resurrections.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I like to talk about it, too. And, you know, actually, the very first episode that Grant and I ever did, which was for a show that we started called Crack-a-Thoom Retro Comic Review, which aired, but then, you know, it disappeared because of Podbean shenanigans. That show was about Warlock, issue one, which was then still by Gil Kane and Roy Thomas.
Roy Thomas, yeah.
So fantastic stuff, Billy. That this recommendation can't be beat. This is probably your best yet, and you've had some doozies in the past.
Yeah, I think we talked about 1,000 Clowns on one of our crazy villains episodes.
Yes, we did. Yeah, Krator and all those villains made it in here, but 1,000 Clowns is definitely one of the best of the bunch. I just love the way Starlin, you know, thought in this period of time. You know, I don't know, and this is also what sort of gave birth to his Dreadstar series for Eclipse later on, or for Epic, I should say. But, you know, it's just so great. This is my favorite era of Starlin. I mean, later he was still good, but his art style changed a little bit. Later on it became more predictable, sort of, but here you could still see images that you would never have thought would have come from Starlin's pen. It's like every page is a surprise. But I love Jim Starlin, you know, yesterday, today, tomorrow, all Jim Starlin stuff, but this is my favorite era. So, really fantastic recommendation, man. Thanks for that. I'm going to reread it now that you've recommended it. Okay, now listen, this is what I've got. You've probably seen this on Twitter. I recently posted it. And this is something that I've had. I got in the mail the other day. It arrived fairly quickly. A while back, someone on Twitter, I think it was one of the people associated with the Fire and Water Network, they posted something about Professor Zumyu Kanori, who sadly left us. He passed away last year. And he was one of the Fire and Water Network stalwarts. He's a fantastic guy, had a great podcasting voice, a couple of great shows. He was always a wonderful guest whenever he starred on any Fire and Water Network shows. A great friend to Rob and Shag and Ryan Daly and all the folks over at the Fire and Water Network. And he was also a magnificent artist in his own right. And, you know, I first became aware of Professor Zoom while listening to the Who's Who podcast that Shag and Rob did, which you're also a big fan of, right, Billy?
Oh, yeah. They're still kind of doing a little bit of stuff there. They're just about wrapping up, though, I think.
Yeah, of course. There's still some stuff out there that they have to discuss. But you're right. It's at the end. But, you know, it's always fun to revisit those old episodes. It's worth it. And then you'll see a lot Dr. Zumyu Kanori's, Professor Zoom, I should call him, Professor Zumyu Kanori's contributions over the show. Because, of course, it started out as him being an artist and then Robin Shag. And through, you know, the feedback they got from various listeners, they sort of happened upon characters that never made it into Who's Who. And some of those characters were their favorites. For instance, Rob's Aquaman from the Golden Age, which would technically be Aquaman from Earth 2. You know, he never got an entry. Superman from Earth 1, right, Billy, technically never got an entry. I mean, what we got was Superman from Earth 2, the Golden Age. And then we got Superman John Byrne era, you know, which is pre-crisis Superman, post-crisis Superman. So we never got the classic Silver Age, Bronze Age Superman, you know, that Mort Weisinger and Julius Schwartz and those guys and Kurt Swan sort of shepherded. We never got to see that Superman in Who's Who and other characters too, you know, like, you know, for instance, obscure characters like Aquaman's pet Topo the octopus, you know. And so what Professor Zoom did is he would use his artistic skills to come up with Who's Who entries, and eventually he came up with so many, and he even, you know, included Rob and Shag, his two great friends, in here in these Who's Who entries. He's got a double page spread for each of them: Aqua Rob and you know, Fire Shag. Well, Shag's only got a single page. Damn. And you know, he put their likenesses in there and drew them as superheroes. And then it was eventually collected by Zoom's family and friends into this wonderful little issue called Zoom's Who. And it features all the characters he drew: Aqua Rob from Earth 2, Aquaman of Earth 2, I should say, Aqua Rob, Astro Lad, Batman Jones, Bouncer, Breakaway Bandit, Cal Durham the Crusader, Domino, Fireman Farrell, Fire Shag, Firestorm the Atomic Man, the Human Flying Fish, I Ching, Kid Lantern, Lady Cop, Lady Viper, Master Villain, Nubia, Professor Zoom himself. And I like the part where he says Professor Zoom created by his parents. It's awesome. You've got Saturn Satan, Saturn Satan, Squid, Steampunk, Super Duper, Superman of Earth 1, Superman's Fortress of Solitude, which we never saw in the Who's Who comics. For shame, DC. And then Superwoman from the classic DC Comics Presents issue. Topo, the TRS-80 Whiz Kids, Wonder Woman of Earth 1, whom we also never got to see, right, Billy? We got Golden Age Wonder Woman. We got post-crisis Wonder Woman. We never got a Wonder Woman from Earth 1 entry. And last but not least, Plastic Man's pal, Woozy Winks. How could he not have a Who's Who entry? So,
crazy.
Collected into this nice little issue. Now, you have to order it through the mail. Yeah, I had to send a mail to one of Zoom's friends. But I don't think that it's available anymore, so I'm not going to give that email out now, because I think they're done at the moment. But whenever, you know, there's some new you know, issues available, I will release it on Into the Weird or on Twitter, and then we'll know again. But this is a fantastic bit of fan, you know, created swag that I got. So very inexpensive, and shipped to me in double quick time here in Taiwan. So thanks for that to Professor Zoom's friends and family, and to everyone from the Fire and Water Network who made this possible. Zoom's Who. And there might be a volume two. Who knows?
Wow.
So that's my recommendations of Ragador, Billy.
Awesome.
Two pretty good books this week that we had on the docket. Mm-hmm. All right, so that brings us to our next segment, which is our Allies of Agamotto. First off, I'd like to thank our fantastic sponsor, Seven Kingdoms, the great power metal band who generously supplies our intro music and sometimes outro music as well. And I would advise you to check them out. They've got fantastic music. Even if you're not a metal fan, I'm sure you'll like them. They've got great lyrics, fantastic lineup in the band, four amazing albums out there. Seven Kingdoms, the titular album, was released in 2010, and then The Fire is Mine followed that one up in 2012, and then Empty Eyes in 2019, and the one that I get our intro from is, of course, Decennium, which features the classic song In the Walls, my favorite of theirs. And thanks again to Seven Kingdoms for championing Into the Weird. And then I'd also like to mention we got two iTunes reviews, both in June. And it shows you how late I am on the uptake here, because since I'm on the Taiwan store, it takes a bit of effort on my part to sign into the US store. I kind of have to go through a VPN, and that's the only way that I am able to look at our reviews that we've gotten from people from the States. So I want to give a great big shout out to two of our recent reviewers. They both gave us 5 stars, and that makes them, of course, eligible for Bronze Age Alter Egos. I've yet to set up some for you guys, but never fear, it will be here before the end of the year. And these two people who left us 5-star reviews are All Kinds of No Good, who left us a review on the 26th of June, and then Benny73, who left us one on the 29th of June. So thank you kindly to those two fantastic reviewers. I'll read your reviews when I give you your Bronze Age Alter Egos, courtesy of Into the Weird. All right, and then I also want to thank one of our newest patrons on our Patreon site, which is at www.patreon.com/intotheweird. And that is Gord Tolton, Ranger Gord. He recently signed up as a new patron, and I want to thank Gord from the bottom of my heart for that. Thank you, Gord, for supporting us on Patreon. And of course, Gord runs his own podcast, Prairie Justice, a vigilante podcast. And I'll be playing a little bit of a promo, well, right now. So let's listen to Gord's Prairie Justice promo and also download the podcast. It's a roaring good time.
You're listening to Prairie Justice, a Greg Sanders vigilante podcast.
Is an exploration of the DC Comics character, the first superhero to use the name of the Vigilante. First published in Action Comics 42 in September 1941, amid Comics' Golden Age and carried as a continuous feature, during those years the Vigilante was also a member of the Seven Soldiers of Victory, and was one of the first DC heroes to appear on the cinema screen in his own serial. Reappearing in the Bronze Age, the Vigilante had a 1970s renaissance throughout the DC universe. Greg Sanders, the Prairie Troubadour, leads a double life as a modern country and western musician, while also delivering justice throughout North America as a mass crime fighter, using the tactics and weapons of his rural Wyoming upbringing. With his friends Billy Gunn and Stuff Leong, many a nefarious scheme was foiled with 6 guns, ingenuity, a motorcycle, and a twirling lariat. Howdy, I'm Ranger Gord. Help me follow the trail of the Vigilante on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of yet another Into the Weird episode. Billy, I don't know what you're going to be up to now. I'm probably going to hit the hay, but I'm going to be doing some more reading since it's early in the morning here, late at night over there for you, though. what are your plans? Oh, wait, Halloween's coming. Yeah. I should ask you, what's on the roster for Halloween? Because you and I have got some plans.
Oh, yeah, you and I won't give away the title, but we recorded an episode for Magazines of Monsters that's going to pop off right before Halloween, the Friday right before Halloween. And it's you and I talking about my favorite Vincent Price flick. So that was awesome.
Oof, that's going to be good.
Oh, yeah. And then you and myself and a special guest that I'll leave anonymous recorded about a crazy television horror, made for television horror movie as well. That was a blast. So, yeah, both of those things are already in the can and getting set up to pop off in October. And then, oh, you know, my first one of October was a blast too. You know, my buddy Rod from the Nashi cast and the Bloody Pit. He and I talked about a Nashi film too, which that'll probably be out around the same time as this episode. So look for that one too. And then there's going to be two other ones I'm going to sneak in there in the month of October as well. So basically you're going to see 6 weeks straight of craziness on Magazines and Monsters.
That's right. And for, you know, our Into the Weird listeners, you can expect another Into the Weird Halloween special to drop and another episode, which is a regular Into the Weird episode, but it will be Halloween related, horror-esque. There's so many great horror issues and titles from Marvel Bronze Age that we've got to, you know, at our beck and call that we could use, and we're going to do that. So expect two episodes of Into the Weird and Halloween, both horror-related episodes, as we're always want to do during our favorite month of October. And then, you know, Billy, we'll be back pretty soon, I think in 2 weeks' time. But if you want to listen to some more Into the Weird content, you can do so if you support us on Patreon. And Billy, that is at www.patreon.com/IntoTheWeird. And there you can find three additional shows. We've plugged this in the past, but we're going to keep doing that. We've got seven subscribers so far, seven patrons. And thanks. You know who you are, guys. We love you. We really appreciate you supporting us there. And of course, we have the three episode, the three series that we're doing there, the three separate podcasts. One is Dragons and Jive, where we talk Luke Cage, Power Man, Iron Fist, and Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu. And then, of course, we've got House of Licensed Ideas, where we discuss all the licensed properties in Marvel at the time. Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Godzilla. We've got ROM, our favorite, Micronauts, and so forth, Planet of the Apes. And then we've got a great show, which is Radio Free Hyboria, one of our favorites, where we discuss the Robert E. Howard properties, which is also technically licensed, but we want to keep that in a separate universe. We're doing Conan the Barbarian, Khal the Conqueror, Red Sonja, and those kind of fantasy-style characters. So three great shows. If you want to support us there for as low as $5 a month, you can listen to all those shows every month. You get three new episodes waiting for you in your inbox. And you can also engage with us with polls and so forth on the $5 tier. For the $10 tier, of course, you get your own Bronze Age alter ego. If you've already gotten one because you left us a 5-star iTunes review, you will get a second one and even a third. Who knows? And of course, Billy, you send them care packages if they're on our $10 tier, filled with comics and other, you know, great comic-related stuff. So please think about that. Support us on Patreon, on Into the Weird there, and then we can also keep the content coming. We can, it will galvanize us, sort of inspire us to provide even better content. And we thank you if you figure us worth your while. And Billy, where can they find you on the socials if they want to engage with you directly?
Yeah, you can look me up on Twitter. It's at BillyD_Licious. That's where I'm super crazy active all the time. So definitely look for me there. And then, like we discussed, Magazines and Monsters, the podcast, it's on there and iTunes or Apple Podcasts, you know, Spotify, all that crazy stuff.
That's right. And if you're sick of Marvel, you can also check out our A World on Fire podcast. That is where we discuss the All-Star Squadron from DC in the 80s. And we are also launching a new show, which is set to drop any day now, definitely before the end of September. And that is our Star Rocket Radio, an Infinity Inc. podcast. Also, of course, DC related in the All-Star Squadron universe. For fans of those series, please give that a try. Hopefully, you know, you will like it. And then, you know, Billy, you can, of course, like you said, be found on Twitter. I'm there at Dark Longbox, and our show is there at Into Weird. And we're always active there daily. And that's how you could message us, but you could also send a message to sinkintotheweird@gmail.com, where we encourage feedback. We would love to hear from you. And then we can also include you in the Allies of Agamotto segment and feature you. If there's anything you want us to promote, we'll gladly do so. But with that, Billy, we'll leave the listeners with a bit of a message. Watch out, because Halloween's right around the corner. You know, you're going to pick a lot of weight with all the candy you're going to be collecting, and with all the, you know, going to pick up some heart trouble with all the scares. Watch some good horror movies. Tell us what you've been doing in Halloween, and we'll definitely read that and listen to that if you want to send us a voicemail as well. And we'll also feature that on our Halloween episodes. But stay safe above all, and stay weird, because weird is cool, and Weird is Where It's At, and then you will, you know, be ready for another jaunt with us into the weird. So with that, it's bye from me.
All right, stay weird, everybody.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.